Happy Hours, the exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media. Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hello everyone. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Happy Hours. I'm Lionel Paul David, Vice President of NHRDN Chennai Chapter, and I'm your host for today. We have a renowned global thought leader with us in our show, Dr. Wayne Brockbank, a best-selling author, management thinker who has made significant contributions to strategic HR and its implementation as a clinical professor of business at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business and as the first consulting partner emeritus of the RBL Group. I'm sure many of our listeners know that Dr. Wayne was acknowledged as one of the top 20 global HR thinkers by HR Most Influential. During my first interaction with him, I think in June 2019 to be precise, he mentioned that he had already made over 120 trips to India as a teacher and as a consultant. So it is no surprise that the government has released a postal stamp to honor him for his contribution. Like many of our listeners, his work has had a profound impact in shaping my thoughts as a HR professional. Therefore, I'm delighted and honored to host him today and discuss with him about the HR competencies for present and the future of work. Since Professor Wayne has been involved as an advisor of the HR competency study, also known as the HRCS research, which has successfully completed 8 rounds since 1987, he is the authority on this subject. So over last 30 years, this study has been the guiding light to the HR professionals across the globe who strive to be effective in their roles. This study has been sponsored by the University of Michigan, the RBL Group, and 19 HR associations across the world, including NHRDN. Hello, Wayne. Thank you so much for taking time to join us. Welcome to Happy Hours, and how are you today?
I'm terrific, and I'm excited to be with you today. Actually, since my opportunity and honor to speak at the Chennai conference, I've made 19 more trips. So this is, if this were being done in person, this would be number 139. So I'm just delighted to be able to maintain and to be honored to maintain this relationship with my beloved colleagues in India. And in the midst of the pandemic, my thoughts and prayers are with you all.
Thank you so much. So as our show has two segments, we'll go with the first one, bottoms up, where apart from your expert inputs, you can also share anecdotes from your experience to help our audience to relate easily to our discussion.
Bottoms up.
Bottoms up. To start with, Professor Wayne, you've played a pivotal role in these HRCS studies. So can you share your views on how the key HR competencies have evolved over these three decades? Since very often we hear strong criticism on how HR professionals have not progressed or how the function is incompetent. So it will be useful to understand if the empirical evidence suggests otherwise. And are we the victims of self-depreciating as HR function and self-critiquing views of our own function? Or do these criticisms, in your view, merit some ground?
In our study of the Human Resource Competency Study beginning in 1987, we now have over 120,000 people in our database. So we think it's the largest database in the world on HR competencies. And furthermore, what we try to do in this study is identify what's going on. There's lots of studies that have gone on to identify what HR professionals ought to be doing, what their competencies should be. I don't find that to be very useful. The issue is not what are the competencies we have. The question is, what are the competencies that impact performance? And to my knowledge, there's no study that actually links those competencies empirically the way we have to business performance. And a third question you can ask is, if we know what competencies are occurring and which ones have impact, the last question is, which ones are the most scarce? And that's an important question, because if we know what's happening, we know what has impact, but everybody's doing it, then there's no competitive advantage. So the third question is also important. So we ask, what's going on, what has impact, and which are more scarce? Because if they're scarce, then that creates the potential for competitive advantage. Now, over the years, we've asked those questions. And as we've done that, especially in the last question, what we've found is that frequently is the case, in fact, it's consistently the case, that HR professionals, the practices that impact performance are sometimes not done across the board. In other words, they're scarce. And that creates kind of a little bit of headache for us, because every 5 years since 1987, we've gone out and said, look it, here are the HR competencies that have greatest impact on performance, but they tend not to be done well. And we identify those, and people get upset because they say, well, that's not what we're doing. I said, that's the point. Those are being done by a small number of the very most high performance companies. HUL would be an example. At the time these studies were done, ICICI Bank would be what. So we, Tata, Emphasis, we have Reliance. We have lots of companies that have that are in the high performance end. So again, that made a headache for us. I remember one time, just a few years ago, we were giving the results, and at the beginning of this presentation, this was in the SHRM conference in the United States, and there are 1,300 people in this auditorium. And we said, look, I'm going to say these are the most important competencies in the high performing companies, but they're not the competencies in general. But these are the competencies that are exhibited in high performance. And in the middle of that discussion, right in the middle of this huge ballroom, somebody raised their hand and said, I really disagree with what you're saying. That's not what that's not the competencies that my company's doing. And I said, well, our data would tell us then you're not in a high performance company. And he sat down. That was kind of embarrassing, to be honest, for him to say that and to do that in front of 1,300 people. But that was true. So the trends have been, we started with business knowledge. In 1987, we said HR professionals need to have business knowledge. Now that's commonplace. But back in 1987, that was not so commonplace. And so we went around telling people high performance, the high performing HR professionals have to have business knowledge. Most people said, no, that's not true. We do HR stuff. And then we went from there to HR being in charge of change management. No. And then people say, no, that's not what change, that's what OD people do. That's not what we do. Now it's commonplace to think about HR professionals as change managers. Then we started talking about culture. And when we started talking, well, culture is too abstract. We don't know what that means. And that's the responsibility of management anyway. It's not the responsibility of HR. Now that's more commonplace. And now we're in the world of technology and information. And again, what we're finding now is we've gone public with this. HR professionals in the high performing firms are doing that, but it's not, they don't tend to be done across the board. Now, last thing by way of this introduction is, so we've gone through identifying the competencies of HR professionals. In the year 2014, 2015, I don't remember exactly, I had a luncheon engagement with most of the board members of the national HR and NHRD. And it was a very interesting discussion. And the discussion focused on, we're not so enthralled with HR competencies anymore, the competencies of HR professionals. We're just not sure that those are having the impact. And I was kind of surprised, because we've been the champions of HR. He says it's, and the discussion was that HR departments seemed that work well together, that have focus across all the HR functions and competencies, are the ones that are high performance. So that led us to add to this last round of our, in the 2016 round of HR companies, and again this most recent round, the idea that that maybe it's the case that HR departments may have more impact than HR individual professionals. And we found that to be absolutely the case. It was almost stunning. We found, for example, that the HR competencies predict only about 4% of business results. But HR departments that work well together with all the functions integrating, those predict 48% of business performance. Wow, that's almost a 1,000-fold increase, when HR professionals focus on integrating their departments as opposed to building their individual competencies. So that's a very interesting finding. And the last thing, just by way of self-critique, you're absolutely right. Our most in every round we've done this competency study since 1987, we've found that HR professionals tend to evaluate themselves lower than do their internal clients, their line managers with whom they work. So it's very interesting by way of an overview. So self-critiquing can be a good thing, but sometimes we critique ourselves more than we deserve.
And true, like linking the most important competencies to business performance and its impact has distinguished the HRCS study and it's been its hallmark. And thanks for that profound insight on how the study is moving from identifying individual HR competencies to HR team capabilities and competencies, because that's what seems to be making the impact. And with those insights, you have laid the ground for the next part of our conversation. So my next question or a follow-up question would be, given the need of HR professionals to be agile and efficient when responding to uncertainties and extreme difficulties caused by this pandemic, would you consider the 2020-21 crisis a watershed moment in the way the HR competencies have evolved? With the complex changes thrown by this crisis, especially on the human side of business, in your broad view, how has HR teams across the globe responded to this so far?
This is a great question. I really love this question a lot. Clearly, this I don't know if you call it a watershed moment in the history of HR. It certainly is a dramatic moment in HR, in the history of HR. During this crisis, I'm not going to say anything you don't already know, but HR professionals and departments have had to focus first and foremost on the health of their employees. Have they helped them to get vaccinated? Have they encouraged mask wearing? Have they encouraged social distancing? So have they focused on the health of their employees? Second, obviously people have had to work from home. They couldn't come to work. And that would require them to be more tech savvy. So some of us, myself included, had to go through very intense and immediate training on how to use technology, MS Teams, for example, which we're using right now, or Zoom or whatever. So that training had to occur really fast, and people had to be more tech savvy. The other thing they had to learn to do is to work without supervision. Although there's a funny anecdote, just after the pandemic started, my daughter and I ran the Disney half marathon just before it was shut down. And I'd flown in from the Middle East, and so my flight came in late. And so it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. My daughter and I showed up at one of the Disney hotels. As we were checking in, the lobby was empty. And there was one man, he was, interestingly enough, he was from New Delhi. He was Indian, okay, but he was living and working for Disney. And so I asked him, so do you like your job? He says, I love my job. Now it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I said, really? Why? But it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Why do you say you love your job? I understand loving at Disney, but you love your job at 2 o'clock in the morning. He says, yes, I love my job because I can get so much work done. Why is that? Because I don't have a boss looking me over my shoulder, asking me stupid questions. I thought that was really funny. And he said, I can get so much done. I don't have people looking over my shoulder, other staff people asking me to do things. I can get my work done. Well, that's what's happening now across the world. Supervisors are less directly involved in the lives of their employees. So that's good news and bad news. If you have the right employees in the first place, then this is a good thing. If you don't have the right employees in the first place, then you've got a real problem. So working at home is without supervision is a major issue. Now, we're compensating for that by having lots and lots of lots and lots of virtual meetings. The problem with virtual meetings is, as you know, the research on communication says that 80 to 90% of communications are nonverbal. That is, you look at people's positioning, their eye contact, how they move their heads. So there's lots of communication that is nonverbal. But now in this virtual world, virtually all the communication is verbal. So that requires that everyone, especially leaders, become much more skilled at listening and trying to pick up on the nuances in people's voices and not in their not just in their physical appearance. And the last problem that we face with this with the virtual at-home meetings is mentoring. We don't have, because it used to be the case that a boss would walk through the office, see a high potential employee, walk over to her and say, "So how's it going?" She said, "Well, I'm doing this." He said, "Well, that's really a great idea. Have you tried doing this?" "Oh, that's a great idea." And so there's a virtual, ongoing, instantaneous learning dynamic that occurs when you're in the office that is not going to occur as much virtually. So the whole idea of mentoring, development, and succession planning will have to be rethought. And I don't see any company that's really thinking through that very clearly. Although that's a new challenge that we'll face. Now, the last thing that is relevant for this is that we say that this is a new world of work. Well, actually, between 1985 and 1995, by the way, I'm aging myself now, there was a huge volume of research on working at home. So we think we're inventing a new way of working. Well, there are literally dozens and dozens of research pieces that examine how people work at home between 1985 and 1995. So that's not new. How we do it today is a little bit different because of technology and the volume at which it'll be done. But keep in mind, we need to be careful not to say we're inventing the future. No, we're kind of reliving part of the past. So it's time not to panic, not to get worried. You know, we've done it. We've been through it before and we'll be through it again. And so those are at least some of the issues. The one final issue on the competency side, we've found in this round, the 2021 round of the competency study, that there's a much stronger focus on employees as opposed to on external customers. And I think there's a reason for that. That is, in the past studies of the competency study, we found the importance of linking internal customers, internal employees with external customers. This time, it's more unilateral to focus on employees per se. I'm not saying whether that's bad or good, but my guess is that's because this survey was taken in the middle of the pandemic. So therefore, managers, leaders, employees themselves, HR were really focused on the health, the mental well-being, and the capabilities of their employees. I think that we'll address more of this, I think, in the next question. But that unilateral focus on just employees, I think, might be taking us down a dangerous path. But go on to the next question then.
Happy Hours, the exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media. Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Okay. So over the years, you've emphasized on the need for HR professionals to focus on value creation and have a strategic focus to create a competitive advantage for business. I'm sure you agree that large focus of HR teams during this pandemic are more of tactical value and tactical nature. So what would be the priorities and the game plan for HR teams in the post-pandemic world?
Okay, in the post-pandemic world, you know, before the pandemic, during the pandemic, and following the pandemic, the fundamental challenge of business is how to design, make, and provide products and services better than the competition. That has not changed. And that formula for business success needs to continue to be the absolute focus of HR professionals. How does your company design, make, and provide products and services better than the competition? And what are the capabilities our people and our organizations need to have to do that better than the competition? So that hasn't changed. And once we get through all this turmoil of the pandemic, HR departments that are going to be successful are going to have that absolute rigid and dynamic and disciplined focus on how to design, make, and provide products better than the competition. That's not that difficult. But we've gone through all this noise that has been really important noise that we focus on during the pandemic. But once we get people vaccinated, people go back to being healthy, hopefully sooner than later, then HR folks need to readjust their focus from health, because everybody's hopefully going to be healthy, to an employee well-being, to how to win in the marketplace. So that's I think a fundamental challenge. The other challenge is going to be, we claim we're in the people business, right? That's what HR folks say. Well, we're in the people business. Well, that's not, so then I ask, so what do you mean by people? Well, what do you mean? What do you mean by people? That's a stupid question. We mean by people, our employees. Then I respond, wait, there are two groups of people that make up business success. It's not, employees are half. The other half of people are customers. Now, when you say you're in the people business and you focus only on internal employees, then you're only 50% right. You forgot the other 50%. And at least at the University of Michigan, 50% is failing. So the critical issue is, how do you bring together the capabilities, skills, abilities, mindset, and commitments of people on the inside in order to meet the demands of customers on the outside? And that integration has to occur. And to some degree, the way the HR professionals, myself included for many years, use the term people, they use it in a very limited way to talk about people on the inside, and they forget about people on the outside. And the ultimate goal of HR is to bring people on the inside together with people on the outside, so that they're creating capabilities, knowledge, skills, and so forth that help them to meet the needs of customers on the outside better than the competition. So we'll have to go back to remembering that's how we bring things together, and that's how HR creates competitive advantage.
So, yes, as you mentioned, the importance of going back to the basics or the fundamentals of enabling business success. So in that context, what aspects of the business and work do you foresee being disrupted post the pandemic? And what would be your advice to HR and business leaders in creating a human-centric workplace and culture that can thrive in the context of future of work?
Well, the pandemic has created some very interesting dynamics, as you know. In some industries, but not across all industries, it's created new business models that will last beyond the pandemic, I think. For example, Amazon was cleaning Walmart's clock for a long time. So in its and as you all know, Walmart now has a subsidiary called Flipkart. So control over the distribution channel has been the explosion around the world. And we've seen that happen in a very, very dramatic way. And that, therefore, has displaced small and even some large retailing stores. Boy, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where I live, where the university is located, JCPenney's has gone out of business. Sears has gone out of business. And that's because people are buying online, and they're bypassing the large stores. Walmart seems to be surviving. Some other large chains are surviving, but they're surviving because they have mimicked Amazon's distribution channel. Another major change has been construction, and the design of office space. Well, companies have learned that they don't need a bunch of office space. And what that's going to do to the business real estate market is pretty threatening, as people learn to live at home. But on the other hand, when they go and learn to live at home, one of the aspects of the new business model is how to help our people to deal with the stress of working at home. You know, when you're in the office, you don't have the dogs barking, you don't have the children needing help, you don't have, if you had a leaky faucet, you'd wait till you got home to fix it. Now you've got a leaky faucet and you might tend. So there's going to be enormous pressures on people as they work from home. So that's going to be a major implication of the new physical setting. And finally, and one of the most interesting things through the pandemic, international borders have become much more impassable. You couldn't go from one country to another. There's still lots of countries you can't go across borders. And that seems to have created some hostility. And we've seen that especially, and I don't know how much of it is caused by the pandemic, but we seem to be seeing more international trade hostility between China and almost everybody else, between China and India and the United States and Europe, England. We're seeing trade disruptions across multiple countries where you can't physically go places anymore. Now, in that process, what does this mean for the human-centric workplace? I already gave you my opinion on that. The problem is human-centric means both employee-centric, but also means customer-centric. And that is not going away. How do you create a set of cultural values where people on the inside value, focus on, and continually develop the skills, abilities, and knowledge to meet the requirements of people on the outside? And to some degree, we in HR need to be careful not to focus too much on the inside without a clear and direct understanding and line of sight to customer requires on the outside. Because at the end of the day, if you create a high supply of skill, knowledge, and people on the inside that don't meet the requirements of people on the outside, the value of those people on the inside is zero. It's simple logic. If the demand, if the supply for something is high, but the demand is low, the economic value is zero. So we need to make sure we link the inside and the outside continually. And finally, I think we're in the process of learning that this pandemic may not be the last pandemic. So the question is, are companies documenting the learning that they experienced through this pandemic so that not if, but when another major disruption like this occurs, that you'll be ready for it? So it won't take companies months and months, maybe even years, to adjust to the new business work reality, but they'll be able to make those adjustments in a matter of weeks, certainly not months in the future. So the question is, will we learn what we've learned about how to be agile and focused in being ready for the next possible pandemic?
Thanks, Wayne, for those rich insights you shared, and I'm sure our listeners will pick some valuable lessons from them. And now, can we move to the next section of Rapid Fire?
Yeah.
The Rapid Fire Round.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to share your take on a few quotes that are not only popular, but I've seen you use during your presentations. So the first one is, data is the new oil.
That's exactly 30% right. 30% is failing at the University of Michigan and most of the universities in India. Data is not the new oil. The new oil is the combination of data, algorithms, new emerging algorithms through which we analyze that data, and the technology that provides the speed of artificial intelligence that enables us to very quickly apply those algorithms to the data. So it's not data is the new oil, but the combination of data, algorithms, and technology is the new oil that then are required for companies to create competitive advantage by being faster than their competition and accessing, analyzing, and applying data for information for competitive advantage. So it's only partly true. It was true probably when it was said, it's only partly true today that data is the new oil.
Okay, the second one, culture eats strategy for breakfast.
That's a great question. It's based on a simple premise. Are there more companies that have great ideas that can't make them happen? Or is the scarcity that companies have the culture to execute, but they don't have great ideas? And the research that I saw not too long ago at Fortune magazine, it's a study that was done through Fortune magazine, says the strategic scarcity is on the culture side. That is, there are more companies that have great ideas that can't make them happen than there are companies that have great cultures but are looking for great ideas. So the strategic scarcity is in the culture side, and that's what Peter Drucker was saying when he stated the term that culture eats strategy for breakfast.
And the last quote, however beautiful the strategy, you should occasionally look at the results.
Well, Winston Churchill. Got to keep in mind that Winston Churchill was saying that in the context that he was tired of hearing Montgomery, the general over his military, have these great strategies, but he wasn't winning any battles. And so the issue is, obviously, the beauty of the strategy is meaningless until it creates results. But on the other hand, a strategy is designed to create results. But if you just sit continually on the strategy side and not use it to execute that strategy to create results, then you have a problem. Abraham Lincoln famously said once in the United States, one of his generals, in fact, the biggest general he had, was not executing his and finally Lincoln wrote him a letter, says, if you're not busy using the Army of the Potomac to beat the Confederate armies. I would like to borrow it for a while so we can win the war. I mean, that's trying to get at the same thing.
Thank you. Thanks for those awesome answers. Now, the next question in the rapid fire is I'll present some statements for your views. These are generally the HR statements that we often hear. HR delivers value through an outside-in approach.
That is totally and 100% accurate. And that's the point I was making earlier. Until HR folks have a clear understanding of the requirements on the outside, then they don't know what to do in terms of developing human capability on the inside. So there has to be that linkage, or what we do on the inside is irrelevant. Let me give you one final quick. In the last round of the competency study, we looked at different categories of knowledge of HR, knowledge of internal operations, and knowledge of external reality. And then we asked, which ones do HR professionals do best? And we do best having knowledge of HR. We have medium knowledge of internal operations, that is accounting, finance, supply chain management, order fulfillment cycles. And what we do overwhelmingly worst that we have knowledge of is knowledge of competitors, customers, capital markets, global financial instruments, stuff that's going on the outside. And then our doctoral student asks, which ones of these differentiate the high-performing firms from the low-performing firms? And what he found was knowledge of HR has no ability to differentiate high-performing firms and low-performing firms. HR professionals, the high-performing firms, have the same knowledge about HR as their counterparts in low-performing firms. So how much does knowledge of internal operations differentiate high-performing firms from low-performing firms? The answer is medium. And how much does knowledge of external reality different on the part of HR professionals differentiate high-performing firms and low-performing firms? And the answer is high. The conclusion of that is that HR professionals in the high-performing firms have a focused and knowledge of the external world more than their counterparts in low-performing firms. So if you're going to create competitive advantage, there has to be an outside-in focus. You need to start with understanding what's going on in the marketplace now and in the future so that you're able to create those capabilities not today that will help your company to win in the future.
Thank you. Now, this is my favorite question, and I've kept it to the end. So you're a person who dons multiple hats seamlessly. So you will have to pick and choose your favorite hat or your favorite avatar that you enjoy the most when I give you these statements. So professor versus author versus consultant, which hat?
Now my wife is not here. She's in the other room, so maybe I can, but the door might be open a little bit, so I better say husband.
Okay. And the next one is father versus grandfather.
Oh man, those are two of the same. The good news is you don't have to raise your grandchildren. You get to just enjoy them. So being the father is more important, but more enjoyable as being the grandfather.
Okay, and the last one, URL versus IRL. So by that, what I mean is the virtual world versus the real life.
I sincerely and deeply miss the face-to-face interaction. You know, right now, we're not face-to-face. Now, there's a trade-off.
Right.
The virtual world, it makes me more efficient. I don't have to leave my house. And I know some of my colleagues just love the virtual world. I don't. I like the personal relationships. I like the opportunity to talk to people individually, face to face, to kind of give hugs occasionally, to be in touch with people face to face and build relationships that I find a little bit more difficult to do in the virtual world. So yes, I prefer the real life world.
Thank you so much for those wonderful responses, Wayne. As always, like every other conversation with you, today's chat was very refreshing and profoundly insightful, and I'm sure all our listeners enjoyed it like I did. On behalf of NHRDN, I thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking time to join this chat. It was my pleasure chatting with you, and I wish you well. Thanks everyone who listened to this episode of Happy Hours. If you liked our show, do share it with your friends and share your feedback with us. This is Lionel Paul signing off, and see you soon in another episode.
Happy Hours, the exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media. Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.